don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
December 27th, the netherworld between Christmas and the New Year. You're starting to feel a little guilty about the indulgences of the last few days.
Right?
There's no such thing as a guilt-free quality street on December 27th. But it doesn't have to be this way. We're here to tell you it's okay to keep the Christmas vibes going for one more day at least. And that's exactly what we intend to do on today's Second Captain's Christmas special. Owen here with Murph. Season's greetings, big fella.
Very happy Christmas to you too, Owen.
We had our greatest ever series on Radio 1 this summer.
We took did, us I think.
From, oh, it was incredible. From Breen F. O'Byrne's Pitch Invasion at Giant Stadium, New York, 1994. All the way to present day, Oris an Uachtaráin, where we had the honour of a lifetime interviewing Michael D. Higgins as the curtain came down on his presidency. Not to mention meeting the ringmaster of the traitor circus herself, Siobhan McSweeney.
Yes.
Not even we could have predicted how big a hit that was going to be.
I mean, we predicted it was going to be a big hit.
I knew it was going to be good. I knew she was going to be good.
Yeah.
But it and she were even better than I expected. Murph was sufficiently wowed by the trappings of the Oris that he awarded Michael D. Higgins the prize of 2025 Greatest Non-Sportsperson Sportsperson. That is set in stone. But today, we have two wonderful guests fighting it out for the title of Greatest Non-Sportsperson Sportsperson for Christmas 2025. Justine Stafford and Shane Daniel Byrne, two of our favourite comedians, two of the best comics in Ireland who have come through a very different route to previous generation of comedians.
Yeah, so many people will have come across their work first online, which is basically, you know, virgin territory for comics now. It's not a gatekeepered, gatekept? thing. It's just you and your phone, and you can find an audience very quickly if you're as talented.
I'm going to go for it.
I think gatekept is probably right. And they've also converted being brilliant on social media into other comedy avenues. Shane is such a good stand-up. Just a few years ago, he was runner-up in the So You Think You're Funny Award at the Edinburgh Fringe, which is a really big deal. And they both wrote and starred in GUTF, an online series, which is a completely daft skit of a morning TV chat show, which I think both of us really loved on.
Today, they'll have to forget all about their friendship and channel the spirit of Scrooge before he got all soft if they want to get their hands on the title.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Well, let me be perfectly clear again, Owen. No one is taking the 2025 title out of Michael D's hands. What Justine and Daniel are battling for today is for the Second Captain's Christmas 2025 Greatest Non-Sportsperson Sportsperson Award, which is, of course, a totally
separate,
totally different thing.
Completely different. We can concoct two ridiculous awards in the same year. There's no problem with that.
We absolutely can. Past winners of this festive bauble include Andrew Hendy of the Mary Wallopers, who took the title 2 years ago despite displaying virtually no sporting talent whatsoever, beyond briefly going to kickboxing classes before he packed it in to smoke fags. However, this was an improvement on the complete sporting vacuum presented by his bandmates, Charles and Sean.
Oh, great lads, great crack, great musicians, terrible at sport.
Really incredibly bad one. Sinead Gleeson meeting Roy Keane and having the subsequent photograph turned into a commemorative jigsaw was enough to seal her victory over Chelsea superfan and former Kilbarrack FC chairman Roddy Doyle. But who will go marching into 2026 with some silverware in their back pocket? We're about to find out, Owen.
Before we get down to it, we're going to hear the first of two tunes from Keane Kavanagh, who's been putting out amazing music for close to a decade now and who released his debut album, The County Star, earlier this year. It's an album heavily influenced by his time growing up playing Gaelic football for Portlaoise. We absolutely loved it. You've heard him tuning up over there. So, Keane, let's hear the whistle, please.
I was taken back when the bullet cried. I did not hear the whistle blowing. This must pass. Your eyes could look no more than laugh. A tin can rattled around the bandstand. Break up bad, but I got low fast. And in a taxi back to Drimna, I had to cry. The driver looked round, lit a smile. Won't be the last one, son, you know that. You'll be alright, lad. Judging by the way I was feeling, you're all I need. home of this pain. You're all I'll need, going off the way of my dreaming. You're all I'll need, I want you this way, yeah. You're all I'll need. They said don't look back, but I had to glance at August once, a virgin heat, burn days to months. Your jeans rolled up against the sun, canal bank cashing out the last one. Now this old warm bay end leads me back towards day, yeah. Past the flame, I'll smoke another lean on friends. I'll feel the shame, but know it ends. The whistle blows and it's all over, but it's not the end. But judging by the way I was feeling, you're all I need. I'll numb out this pain. You're all I'll need, going off the way of my dreaming. You're all I'll need, I want you this way, yeah. You're all I'll need, till the edges of time keep you mine.
That was The Whistle from the excellent Keane Kavanagh, who'll be joining us again later in the show. Brilliant stuff, Keane. But if this time of year is about anything, it's about getting way too competitive with your loved ones over apparently innocuous games, as long-held resentments come bubbling to the surface with often spectacular
consequences. Well, I love the McDevitt household.
It's every household,
time.
Isn't it? Many a Christmas around the country has been ruined by that round of Trivial Pursuit when Cousin Brian takes things just a bit too far. So it's in that spirit of joyous competition that we bring together two of Ireland's best comedians to put their friendship on the line in pursuit of the ultimate prize of Second Captain's Greatest Non-Sportsperson Sportsperson for Christmas 2025, Justine Stafford, Shane Daniel Byrne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Are you guys ready for this? It's going to be dog-eat-dog stuff today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not interested in that. I would talk weird friends, Justine.
No,
I don't know
I'm
want to fight.
I'm not a competitive person in the slightest.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I'm just happy to be here.
I don't believe you, actually.
That does sound very like putting on a false front.
I feel like people who say, I'm really not that competitive. That's like a major tell for insanely competitive people.
You're just a lovely woman.
Do we even have to do this win or lose? Why can't we all just have a chat, you know?
I really have never been. Doesn't suit me. Wouldn't take to it now.
Who do we think is the early favourite for the title? They're both trying to play down their chances. I don't want to prejudice anything there.
I go into these things with an open mind.
Okay.
But just one of these people has a county intermediate football title. That's all I'm saying. Right, okay. That's what I've heard.
But only ladies football. That's not even the real thing.
An intermediate title, Justine?
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, my football career as a kid, it was big in our family, the GAA. You know, my dad was the chairperson for our team as well. So my brother had no interest. So I kind of had to be the child who went into it. I had no other choice. And I wouldn't say I loved playing. Exercise was never my strong point. Just didn't enjoy it at all. But yeah, when I was 15, the team ended up getting into the intermediate final.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You were involved?
I was on the bench.
The periphery, okay.
I was on the bench.
Well, at 15.
Yeah, that is impressive.
This is the thing, because like when I think back to that team, it was all women in their 20s, 30s. Of course I wouldn't have been starting. I wasn't.
Mullinoygog is Chucky Sheet, you know what I mean?
There you go.
You were there in the expectation that it would be 20 years of uninterrupted service from you to the club.
Yeah.
That's not quite how it worked out, but I mean, you know.
That was the plan.
Yeah.
And then I just got so into school, I was such a nerd that I had to give up one of the things. And sport was the first to go.
I believe you were from a family of Man United fans, isn't it?
Yes. Again, that was just kind of a thing of like, oh, my family support them, so that's who you have to support. But I would get the jerseys and then put a waistcoat over them. That was my style. Sure, it was kind of another bit of ammunition for school to be like, let's bully her about that. I was like, yeah, I just like to give them new things to go for. So that was my
Sometimes youth. There's a need for bullying.
There is, right.
I've seen those pictures.
Yeah.
Was sport a big thing in your family, Shane?
Yeah, my family are sporty. Big football family. They have a separate WhatsApp group to talk about football. Because there's four boys in our house and there's a 50-50 split, gay straight, the devil split, they call that. So me and the other gay, we're not in it. So the rest of them all are in a football group, and like my sister-in-law and all, she's in, they all have season tickets to go see Ireland and all that stuff. Yeah, the boys in green, they do all that. But yeah, like that expression, no interest, he'd no interest. Yeah. That becomes, you know what that becomes in your child? If you're a boy, it's like, or me certainly at the time, it was like, oh, he doesn't like all the normal things. Jesus Christ.
I know.
He was like persecuted.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried bits. I did play football for a little while. I used to hate it so much. I used to go and I'd be delighted. They're like, I'd be on the subs as well. And then they'd give you a run. I'd be like, oh God, don't bother. Just let me stand here on the grass. Like I'm happy out. That's a bit miserable. Okay, cheer up. Okay,
let's dig into the misery for a second here. Okay. Now that you brought up, did it actually feel a bit like you're being excluded?
You know, it can be a bit like other people's dads can make you feel bad. It's like, I don't know what to do with him. People do that. And it's like, he doesn't like all the normal. And you're like, I am normal. And you're like, you do feel a little bit like, I just don't want that.
That's,
and I liked other things. I liked other sports and games and things, but it was just like football is just such the king that it's like, or soccer, Justine, just for your benefit. But that it is, you're not involved in the big thing, so it's like, oh yeah, you're left out. Yeah,
but it definitely felt like I was playing it because I had to. It wasn't that I wanted to. I didn't enjoy it at all. Yeah. And I would dread, like, we used to go training on the hill at Tara and doing sprints up and down it.
See, that seems a little intense for
and I would
14,
cry
15.
Going and cry coming home. It was not a fun, but it was
just a good hard training session. That's what they want, don't you? Crying on the way home.
Really dedicated to it, but I did not enjoy it.
Even the games though, when you were playing the matches?
No, was very
So Nobber is obviously like an intensely sort of GA, like, mad community then, and you just kind of felt like this was like a thing you had to opt out of rather than a thing you could opt into.
Yeah, like, I mean, our team as well was outside in Arbor, St. Michael's, so it was a different team as well, but it's just that local parish, you know, rivalry, and everyone would play and different things like that, but it was never really what I wanted at all. But I felt like, God, I won't fit in if I don't play this. But I was just wanted to make videos, and that wasn't what anyone in that area would do, and, you know, they wouldn't understand that world.
My producer Shane informs me that just last week you wowed an instructor at your new gym. Flexibility.
Yeah. Okay. So I went, they make you go to this induction class before you can start, because I'm going to an expensive one, because then I'll have to go.
Yeah.
So I tell myself now. But then, you know, didn't.
The cheap ones are just cheap enough for you to not bother.
I know. I have a subscription and I get the notification every month. I'm like, work away. You have, like, half that.
Seems like you're cracking on great anyway.
I was blaming the COVID for a while, but that's gone. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, since COVID, I don't know, very close contact in there. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, and then she was like, so they got you to do like little, so some squats, some lifts, whatever, little, just for form, whatever. And then she was like, there was the three other lads who were in the induction, they were all like just returning to the gym having been off or injured or whatever. And then I was like, no, I haven't done anything in years. And then she was like, when I did my squats, and she was like, oh, this is a good squat, actually. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And then she was like, you all do some training? I was like, no. She's like, you play something? And I was like, no, nothing. And she kept drilling me on it. And then I had to go, like, in front of the lads, I had to go, well, I did gymnastics as a child. And that was like, that has stuck to me. I swear, that gymnastics is good stuff. I think every child should get into it. Flexibility, mobility.
Yeah,
that stuff.
What was your main discipline?
I like my specialty that I can still do is a round off, which is looks like I'll let people call it a cartwheel, but it's not a cartwheel. It's more advanced than that. You kind of put your two feet meet at the top and then you turn as you're doing it. And I do that on stage sometimes. If,
yes.
If there's a stage where I can fit it, I'll do it. And it always goes
down. What sort of square footage do you need to do it?
I'm thinking this table, with this table.
Unfortunately, this studio is too small. I check every room I enter.
But you've done it in small stages. Like.
I've done it in small places.
You're like an FBI guy. You scan the room. It's like, I can't do it now.
I've taken a few risks. And like when I was doing before, when I was kind of still starting in comedy a bit, and I was doing that, and I was like, okay, I'd get somewhere and I'd plan to do it, and then there wasn't room, I'd freak out. I'd be like, okay, well, I need that. I need that cartwheel. Like, I need space for that. But yeah, I still feel impressive doing that one, yeah.
Where did you find your people growing up? Scouts was a big thing, I believe.
I was kind of split between this kind of between the masculine and the feminine. Mm-hmm. The masculine was the scouts, if that's not a contradiction in terms, and then the youth theatre, and then between the scouts and the venture scouts, which is after when you're kind of, what were we, 16, 17, and then, the youth theatres at the same time. So the two of those things were kind of what I'm built of, you know.
Adventure scouts.
No ad, just venture.
Venture scouts.
Yeah, I don't know what that, I don't know, you don't really use that, I don't know. But that's like if you're finished, there's no kids there, you're 15, 16, 17, and that was, I mean, we were a bit bold in that now, that wasn't all about, you know, tying knots and building things. We were doing extracurriculars and having explorations of our own.
Did you get badges for that?
There was no badges awarded for the stuff we did. No, but it's just, there's something, I think it's good for like, if there's a fire and somewhere and I'm doing something to that fire, people are like, oh my God, stop. Oh my God. And anyone who's a scout will know that you're like, I'm fine. I can manage this. Just like because you're cooked on fire, lived by fire, that we're like, no, I know this. I understand this.
That's so funny.
I have a spiritual connection to fire, Justine. Yeah. I do, yeah.
Because I did scouts, but it was Nobber scouts. And like, we didn't have badges. We didn't. Like, it was just to meet up and eat rich tea biscuits and drink my wadi in the local hall. Like, we didn't go on adventures. We went camping the odd time.
Are you sure that wasn't the Irish Country Women's Association?
No, because we were Cubs. Beavers Cub Scouts.
Oh, you did all that.
Three, yeah. But they brought us up. There was like some meeting in Dublin of all the scout groups, and we were like looking at people's jumpers, and like, they have badges. What are the badges for? We never got one badge. I think it was just an excuse for our parents to get us out of the house.
What kind of outdoorsy stuff did you get really good at then?
The best thing I did, I think, was when I was 17, me and there was this thing called, it's called the Explorer Belt, where, and you literally get a belt at the end, right? So not a badge, a belt.
Mm. Oh,
and
God.
You go, it's kind of like it's like totally wild that this happens. It was a TV show, like basically like a TV show. You go off and you're in teams of two. So me and my best mate went, I was his best man at his wedding last year. And you go off, ours was in Portugal. You get dropped off a bus in teams of two somewhere in Portugal, and you're given an envelope, and that has a map of the entire country, and they have instructions, and it says you must get back to this grid reference between 2 and 4 p.m. in 10 day or 10 or 11 days time.
10 or 11 days?
Yeah, and you have to walk minimum 200 kilometers. You have, the budget was like €8 a day each per team, and you have to cook outside, live outside, whatever, or live by your wits or whatever. And so the first thing you do is you get off this bus and then you go up to the nearest person in this little Portuguese rural village and be like, can you show me where we are on this map?
Oh my
and
God.
Then you have to figure it out. But it was honestly, still one of the best things I ever did in my whole life. It was so good. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And then assessed at the end. So you finally find where you need to get to. But you don't necessarily get your belt.
That includes a boat.
Right.
You have to figure that out for yourself. You have to get a ferry. You had to figure that out for yourself. Yeah, on the last day, there's a boat, and if you don't notice there's a boat, you could have to walk 20 kilometers or extra, whatever. Yeah, and they grill you and they assess you on what you did and how you worked as a team, and they grill you, like there's like 3 or 4 interviews. It really is like something off, like they'd make a TV show out of it. Like,
so the insurance must be insane for a group of kids to go out there, like
to be dropped in the middle of Portugal.
Those adults, amazing. Like that was, we were away for like 3 weeks overall. And they just go do that of their own time.
Yeah.
People are really amazing, the volunteerism. Like I couldn't anymore. Yeah. I did some, but like not anymore now that my life has begun. Yeah.
It wasn't as intense in Nobber, but it sounds like
no, really. It's like we'd climb a tree. That was the height of our
Is there nothing you do in your life and you go like that you feel like you learned that in the scouts? Nothing like that.
Like, yeah, I'd be good with a tent and we did go camping and with a fire.
And be robust in the outdoors.
Yeah. But like growing up on a farm, that wouldn't bother, you know, you'd be out in the fields the whole time.
How did you two first get to know each other, Justine?
Would have been, was one of the years did I see you perform at Ivy one of the years first. Or how did we
at
first
the comedy
ever?
Festival? Probably yeah, the comedy festival. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the Ivy Gardens, yeah.
Yeah, and you would have been doing a cartwheel at that point. I was like, this
probably was cartwheeling around then. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
my
yeah,
cup of tea, you're thinking.
I was like, this guy.
Cartwheels are
gonna go far.
You've done a lot of, you made a brilliant online series together, GUTF, a skit of a morning TV chat show. To give people an idea that this is where the series goes, at one point Shane finds out through a medium that he's going to come to a grisly end in a terrorist attack at the IFTAs orchestrated by Brian McFadden.
So yeah, that's the best line written in the whole, because we had that as the idea, but we don't know what where that was going to fit in.
Yeah,
so I thought
yeah,
they were just like, this has to be relevant in some way.
I played the woman host, but I didn't dress up as a woman at all, and that's the choice I'm really proud yeah, of. It was like, I just was a woman, but I was also called Shane. I must dress like myself. I'm really pleased with that one. I don't know.
You both made your names online, you know, and built your own audience from scratch, Justine, posting on social media, doing all the videos. What do you like about that sort of comedy and how has that worked for you?
Well, I think it's because when I was a kid, I was making short films. So it totally just came from that I loved making and like storyboarding, like properly editing and all that I loved doing all that stuff. So then, like, yeah, in COVID, when the world was just looking for any distraction online, it just felt like now's a good time to get more into that. It's just like funny that people can see stuff that you've made and instantly like get something from yeah, it and respond to it. It's also scary because you can build up a following so quickly and you're like, Jesus, now everyone is.
We talked to Vittorio Angeloni, who's based over in London, talked about a similar theme, and he described trying to do what he wants to do and mm-hmm, say what he wants to say and not getting too influenced by what people are liking immediately.
Thing, yeah.
But he says you have to package it in a way, his phrase was, that suits the glorious pagan god that is the algorithm.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, because I look back at stuff I used to make and years back prior to having much of a following and no one understood it. It was like, what the hell is that? Yeah. And I've put some of those things out now since and people have really loved it. But then there's still ones that I'll put out and I'm like, I love this, but the world doesn't understand what it is. And then there's things that I do that people love and I'm like, I'm not really sure if I enjoy doing that. But you have to kind of like a balance between stuff that people really enjoy and want and also stuff that I creatively want to make.
Yeah,
and find them out. And then also the algorithm. But I'm like, yeah, it is. That's just like, and it's always changing, all that online like algorithm and stuff, that I'm like, I just put it out when I put it out and we'll see what happens.
You mentioned this, the filmmaking did as a kid. This is pretty serious stuff. You were winning awards, jet setting around the world.
Yeah, it was mad, like, because it was just that we were in a competition in primary school. It was like the first year they'd done it, but it was Fiche Film Festival, where it was encouraging schools to get used to using technology. And our school was picked and we made a short film. And my teacher at the time, his brother is a DOP, Cathal Waters, and he had seen the film and I'd shot and edited it. And he was like, who did that? And teacher told him it was me. And he was like, I think she's an eye for that kind of stuff. So that was entirely then what got me into it. Like, I got a camcorder from Santa that year and just forced my family to be in my videos. But they were always comedy based. And I think the best feeling to me was going to festivals. And if a crowd laughed, I was like, they got the joke. Oh my God, that to me is still probably the best feeling. So that just really got me more and more into it. And there's a national competition for under 18s called Fresh Film Festival. And then I ended up winning at that and got to go to South Korea, yeah. Which was insane because they gave me like a translator when I got there. I was like, good luck to you, because this isn't even English half the time when I'm speaking. But then, you know, you're there with kids from all over the world making a short film together. And then I got to go to Berlin to a festival and to Greece. And it was so weird as well, because like the film I'd made was all my grandparents and grandaunts and uncles escaping from an old folks home. And like, half the terminology is so Irish, but like they had Korean subtitles and I was like, how the hell did they even translate half of what's in this film? But that was totally then what I wanted to do and go into that. But like, again, coming from rural background, it wasn't really the done thing. And I would go to the film festivals and be like, these are my people. Oh my God, they understand it. But then none of those people would be in like the GA world or anything like that. And I was like, oh, my people. And then I'd go back and be in school and be like, okay, these don't really, they're
so
not.
So you weren't being seen as the local celebrity arriving home from being around the world?
No. It was very much like, what are you doing? Like, you know, but then over time it became more like, all right, that seems to be what she's into. But there was a fear around it, like in rural, where I was from anyway, of like, oh, you'll not get a permanent job in that. Mm. Oh, no, that's not a secure job.
Yeah. It'd be nice for you to have taken over, you know, as a hobby, you know.
My father's logic was always like, oh, you could do primary teaching and then do your videos in the summer. Like, that's logic.
Yeah. I wanted to do theatre, is what I was interested in, from the youth theatre. And I remember I was doing an impression. I was quiet in the class. I wasn't class alone, but doing an impression on the corridor at little break, you know. We stand by lockers at little break, windowsill at lunch. And I was doing an impression of Ashton Kutcher on Punked for the boys, whatever. And then the vice principal, or maybe it was the principal, I forget what she was, and he witnessed this. And then it was this weird moment where, like, the boys all, it was like a conveyor belt, and suddenly I was with the principal on my own. And then we went on a walk around the grounds together. Aww. I don't know where this came from, but he was like, why don't you do, if you could do primary teaching? And he's like, then you'd have 3 months in the summer for all your dramatics. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to be a star. You know what I mean? It's like, now, to be honest, he was right. I should have done that for a while. You know what I mean? I didn't make a cent in my 20s. You know what I mean? Not one penny. So, yeah, fair enough. He was probably correct.
But my dad as well, like, I know it's coming from the best place, and he's just always worried. But even when things are going well, he's like, oh, you could teach it, though, could you?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, film is now a subject in school. You could teach it and still do your videos. But I wouldn't have suited me. I actually went back and studied two courses at the one time. So I was in second year in DIT doing film broadcasting, and in St. Pat's in first year doing primary. Wow. And I would
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, no, it was insane. And I would go from lectures in DIT.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
In Pats, they'd be like, I just did your leaving cert, did you? I was like, no, I just came from a lecture in DIT. And they're like, what are you doing with your life? But I just knew the kind of routine of it wouldn't suit me. I kind of needed change and different things going
on. You mentioned that you weren't making money in your 20s, but the stuff you were doing, the theatre work, all of that, did that stand to you in what you've gone into?
I think so.
In terms of, like, stand-up and online stuff?
It wasn't like, I wasn't interested, well, I was a bit, but it wasn't like, I did work in it for years, but I was kind of more around other people who were much more talented than me and much more skilled and adept and interesting than I was. So I was kind of like floated along with them. And I did some good stuff, whatever. But like any performance is useful for starting stand-up then. Those things I kind of knew in advance. Mm. So I kind of felt when I started stand-up, when you start, your first gig is either good or fine. It's never usually rubbish. People are usually kind about it. They usually tell the audience it's your first gig. But mine was good. And I was like, I had a good first gig, and I was like, oh God. And I had this audio recording where you can hear the other comedians, and they're like, who didn't speak to me at all beforehand. Mm. Thank you very much to them for that. It was really encouraging. And then you can hear going, God, he's so confident up there. And I listened to that back over and over. I was like, yes, that's the closest thing I get to a compliment.
Yeah.
And I'm more, like, we're joking about being competitive. I'm blokey about comedy. I'm like I'm real, like, pig-headed about it. We all want to be the best. Everyone pretends that's not what's happening. If you go on any gig where there's four of you, you want to be the best one. That's just what we're all doing. It doesn't mean anything after. Once it's over, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect your pint or your relationships, but it is kind of a driving force, a motivation. Yeah.
I was actually looking for a good description of what exactly is going to be needed from the two of you after the break, and pig-headed competitiveness just about sums it up. So thanks for that, Shane.
That's exactly the kind of unfestive and, frankly, obnoxious desire to win that's going to earn points for me, Owen.
We'll be back with Justine Stafford and Shane Daniel Byrne in a few minutes when one of them will be crowned our greatest non-sportsperson for Christmas 2025. And Keane Kavanagh will be performing another track from his debut album, The County Star, on our Second Captain's Christmas special.
Second Captain, First Captain, whatever.
You're listening to a Second Captain's Christmas special on RT Radio 1, where two of our very best comedians, Justine Stafford and Shane Daniel Byrne, are duking it out for the honour of being Christmas 2025 champion. Murph, we've heard about Shane's travails as a scout travelling across the length and breadth of Portugal unaccompanied as a teenager, and Justine's reluctant yet quite successful GAA career. But how have we gotten this far without discussing Justine's juggling videos?
I actually don't know, and it's a major
criminal
oversight
on our part.
You are astonishingly good.
I'd say grandmaster juggler.
Wow, thank you. There wasn't a lot in the country to do growing up, and again, it all came from like sixth class. We're doing some subject, I don't know, about life, and the teacher was like, "You have to find a way to juggle things in your life," and I just
about life.
I was like, "I hear you," and I just took that so literally, and then spent that summer. Like, I mean, I found a guy, Juggling Steen was his name on YouTube, and he was the coolest kid who would show all these tricks and things. I was like, that's it, that's who I'm going to be. And I just, yeah, spent the whole summer learning it, and then I invested in LED juggling balls.
Wow.
So I could do tricks in the nighttime, so any time of day I could whip it out. Yeah, I just really got into it. And again, it felt like, wow, finally a sport. Like, I loved the GA and I loved watching it, but I wasn't good at it. And finally now, this thing, I was like, I could actually do this. I could be good at this. Mm. Not that it's a recognised sport, and I'll never make county at it, but it's something I can do.
Is it applicable in real life situations?
I mean, no, because I did it once on a date. I mean, the date was going nowhere, clearly.
What were you juggling?
Candles from the table, like things
in a restaurant?
Would go in a pub,
like,
in a dark corner. Yeah. But it, yeah, that was, there wasn't a second day. Oh. Obviously,
this was a last stage attempt to say
this was truly, as in, the conversation wasn't good anyway. Neither of us knows, like, just gotta do anything now at this stage.
Amazing,
yeah.
It did bring you within touching distance of probably the most prestigious prize in Nobber. Recently, a couple of years ago.
It did, yeah.
This is probably a painful
episode memory to bring back.
Yeah.
I did compete for the Queen of Nobber Fair, which is emceed by the local Undertaker on the main street of Nobber, and you're competing for that title, and it was me and some other girls up for it. But the thing is, like, I didn't even want to go for it. It was just one of the lads being like, here, we're down someone, will you go in and do the competition? I'm like, oh God. So you're there on the street and they're like, what will you do for your talent? I'm like, I can juggle, but I don't have, like, people were giving me their car keys. I was juggling car keys and someone's vape as well. And yeah, I did that. But again, look it, I don't think it would have been a good look anyway. For me to win with a big following, all this, you know, for the other contenders, they're like, that wouldn't be fair.
Do you think that they were slightly suspicious of your motivations for entering the Queen of Nobber Fair competition?
They're probably, like, I just wanted the sash. I'd wear that. Yeah. I'd wear that in the shower. I'd never take it off. That is just pride, you know, that to have that.
This is a non-ironic competition. So unfortunately, Justine, that will count against you. I feel like that might have been the vibe there.
Damn. Yeah. But there was other people jiving. Another thing that I cannot do at all, because I had gone for Queen of Muff Fair, which is the neighbouring village a couple of years previous, and to win that, you have to jive.
You have to jive. And there's no, like, special skill. It's
no,
like, jiving
you
is.
You have to jive. And honestly, wow. Like, I walked out onto the dance floor and people take it so seriously. Yeah, and I cannot at all. But a guy grabbed me to start doing jiving and realised I can't do it. And he was like, what are you? You're useless. Get out of here. I was like, yeah, no fair. Like, I don't stand a chance.
Can your mum and dad jive?
They're incredible.
And how do they know how to do it? Like, when do people learn this stuff?
This is the thing. I think it's from the dance halls when they were growing up. Like, say, the way we would.
But they're not old enough for that, are they? Or maybe, maybe Nobber's a little bit older.
60s.
Okay, right.
Yeah, but again, I think it was still like they'd go to show bands and things.
Yeah,
And there'd be far more of that dance type there. That just did not skip onto our generation. I mean, it does still in the country in places, and people would go to that, but it didn't skip on to me.
You might make up for your failure at the Nobber Fair today. Before we decide which of you is going to be our greatest non-sportsperson for Christmas 2025, we need you both to pick a highlight from your sporting careers. Shane, the honours first, please.
Mine was in primary school, and there generally in primary school, boys played football, girls did other things. I usually did other things as well. I'm one of the girls. But one time there was a fight started because the girls were like, let us play football. And then even girls who weren't interested in football were like, yeah, let us play football. And then our teacher, one of those brilliant teachers, Mrs. Shanahan was her name, and she was like, held a debate, basically. We had a town hall meeting in the class about the football situation. And then it was agreed that girls could, it was decreed that girls could play football. And because of our democracy and diplomacy, we were granted an extra yard. And you know when it was the extra yard where it's just your class? It was like really special. And we were out there and all the girls played football. Now, they ran after the ball. They ran after the ball, but just celebrating their feminist revolution. And I remember I was in goal at one end because that's what you do with a little gay boy. And he might catch it, but I was scared. But and then down the other end, Alice Coburn was put in goal. And I remember it was a beautiful strike on goal from the wing, I believe you'd call it. And that came in, beautiful strike. And she went up and it hit the heels of her hand. hand first, and then she managed to go, and so hit up, she bounced it up, and then she caught it, and all the girls were just jubilant. It was this huge, they weren't even on the same team as her, but they were just pleased for the sorority of it all. And that stands out at me, of the beautiful inclusive nature that sport can have. So that's what
that
I celebrate.
That is beautiful. This is the first time a guest has ever put together a highlight that doesn't actually really involve them in any great way. I mean, you're a bystander.
I'm just that big a person. I was a bystander on the pitch as well, to be honest, like, so that makes sense.
Justine, your time has come. How old is your sporting career?
I look it. I mean, the GAA, I have loved it all my life. So I think the highlight for me has to be that I got to play Camogie at Croke Park.
At Croker,
I played Camogie.
For somebody who professes to have had an awful time playing GAA, you're getting the county finals, you're playing at Croke Park.
No, wait for it, because it's confusing. When I worked in Joe.ie in my 20s, there was this campaign where I'd never played Camogie in my life. It wouldn't be big in Meath, we're more of the football. But they basically had this campaign that they would have a team play, an underage team, play at the halftime at the Camogie All-Ireland final. And so I went to be like part of this team who were like under 17s. I was 24. And I went down to train with them in Newmarket and Fergus in County Clare for 2 months. And then we played at halftime in Croke Park at the All-Ireland Camogie final.
Wow.
So I don't really know how that happens. That I'm. It's kind of like, you know, you'd see that in teams where someone was definitely over the age.
Yeah.
But they said, we'll keep him in for a few years. No one knows.
It was abundantly. Yeah. We'll keep him back 1 year. Yeah.
Be fine. I was 24. They were 16. But it was fine.
Wow.
And yeah, that was definitely my highlight.
But like Croke Park on All-Ireland final day. Like, we're not messing around here.
No, it was insane.
Wow.
And I loved that sport. I wasn't good at it, obviously, but I really was like, wow, these girls. I was just more, I just wanted to be there for them because they were incredible.
And did it feel exciting when you went out? Did you go through the tunnel and all that stuff?
Yeah. And it was like, because you never realise, well, I'd never, how big that pitch is. I was like, oh my good God. Like, different to being there and supporting me all the years, but I'm like, actually been on it, the nerves, but also that I was nervous for the girls. I was like, ye are class, and you've welcomed me in over the last 2 months. Me coming up from Mead, like it did Newmarket and Fergus, they'd gotten me a jersey with my initials engraved into it. I still have it at home. And I was like, this has been the most heartwarming 2 months, and now look at us, we're on Croker. What is happening?
Murph recently brought out a book about learning to play hurling in his 40s for the first time. It's called Old Parish.
It's still available on all good bookstores.
It's just after Christmas now. It's probably sold out.
If someone bought you a terrible book and you're going back in with the receipt, listen,
I would love to. And I really think, because I started then just doing like juggling tricks with the hurl, and like I really think I should have done that growing up.
Yeah.
But I got into that instead of the football. That could have been the nice combo.
Or the juggling, you know. Yeah, but listen. You know.
You're both saying you're not competitive, but I kind of feel like,
there's a real tension in the air now. It's quite tense in here.
Shane, well, confident how it's going to go for you now?
No, not at all. I feel like that was such a beautiful story from Justine. I'm like, she's a proper athlete. Like, who cares? I don't care.
Hello, you are, my lord, gymnast.
We've both been great guests. You've both been great guests.
You've both been excellent.
Cheers, I appreciate it.
Only one can become the greatest non-sportsperson for Christmas 2025.
The tension is too much.
Murph, in fact, you might want to pop your headphones on here as well, because there's some dramatic music that's going to
tee us up here. Further,
really get your nervous. Yeah. Can you please rank this sporting life of Justine Stafford and Shane Daniel Byrne?
You don't understand. I could have had class.
We don't have stars in this game, Mrs. Weaver.
What do you have, then?
People like me.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Well, it's been a real barn burner, this one. No quarter asked or given, no backward step taken, no retreat, and indeed, Owen, no surrender. But what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object? We begin with a reminder of the ground rules. I will, of course, have to assess your sporting abilities, pick a sports person that I feel most closely resembles you and your sporting achievements, and then, having considered your all-time sporting highlight, give you points out of 100 to see which one of you will be crowned Christmas 2025's greatest non-sportsperson sportsperson. We begin. Shane Daniel Byrne, a man whose verbal gymnastics are almost as impressive as his freakish Reese McClenaghan-esque flexibility, which continues to confound and amaze to this day. And this explorer belt sounds incredibly ill-advised and quite mental, but I admit there's no quid in you. That's obvious. Is it sport? Well, would you tell Tom Crean to his face that he wasn't a sportsman, Owen? Of course you would. He's been dead for 100 years now. But I will say, Shane, your sporting highlight It's not the most impressive thing I've ever heard. It's basically the sporting highlight of someone else's. And well done again, Alice Comer.
Oh, Alice, great
that you just happened to be adjacent to. And to be honest, I think we'd be doing Alice a great disservice if we assumed she never soared higher than stopping a half-inflated football from going past two school jumpers in the early noughties. But listen, on we move. Shane, your score is 75 points.
Thank
That's
you very
respectable.
Much.
Yes.
Irish comedy's juggler-in-chief, Justine Stafford, meanwhile, has the hand-eye coordination of a young Gabriella Sabatini, Argentina's brightest tennis talent of the late 80s and early 90s. And Gabriella would no doubt also approve of your signature retro Premier League jersey waistcoat combination. Your sporting highlight is playing camogie in Croke Park. Not watching someone else do it, Shane. You know, I'm...
I'm just explaining
the...
Taking strays here, what the hell?
You also won a county intermediate football title at 15, which is real-life, genuine sporting achievement. And you share a home county and a surname with the great Brian Stafford.
Yes.
So this is all...
Distantly.
Well, we take, this is all very strong stuff. Now, I will have to deduct some points for failing to win the Queen of Knobber Fair competition in 2020 and the earlier failure at the Queen of Muff Fair. But listen... I'm in the results business here. You couldn't quite get the job done. That's just a fact. But you have shown skill. You've shown versatility. You've shown, quite frankly, a remorseless competitive attitude. As well as that, you have 79 points.
Ooh.
And you leave with our second captain's Christmas 2025's Greatest Non-Sportsperson Sportsperson Award, Shane Daniel Byrne and Justine the Champ Stafford. These have been your sporting lives.
Well done, guys.
Wow.
Any complaints, Shane?
Well, she got points there for having the same a surname as someone. My yeah. name is literally Shane Byrne, like the rugby player. Like, can I get nothing for that?
That is true. That wow. is true. Is it a different spelling? Actually, no. It's the same spelling.
So oh, that's well. 5 points. With just
well, you've both been brilliant. Thank you so much. We wish you both continued success in 2026. A round of applause, please, yes. Murph, for yes. Shane Daniel Byrne and Justine Stafford. Thank you, guys.
One, two, two, two. A baby, I've wasted my time. My bygone's gone by, the same old disease. In truth, I've tread on my life. The highway's too high, the water's too weak. To dilute the shit in my veins, she won't feel no pain. My girl's with me. The saints can all march into space, and the walls I could face, and this bottle I'll read. In the bar that doesn't close, on the corner of Lowe's, where the whiskey comes a-pouring in streams. Well, she knows that I'll be late when I'm drinking my way in the arms of the old county star. Bar they couldn't close on the corner of Lowe's, where the stout is so cold you might freeze. Well, she knows that I'll be safe when I'm drinking my weight in the arms of the old county star. In the arms of old county star. Da 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 da
stuff. That's the County Star by Keane Cavan, a title track from his brilliant new album. Keane, thanks a million for that. You know when you don't want a song to end?
Yeah.
That's probably a good sign.
Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant album cover as well, we should mention.
Yeah.
It's you with your guitar alone in the stands in O'More Park, Portlaoise.
Yeah, shot by David Willis. Yeah, goes hard as hell, hard as nails.
So you've been described in the paper of record, the Irish Times, as a former GA star. Would you say that this was an accurate description, or did they not go far enough?
Well, it was both being exceptionally generous to me by describing me as a former GA star, and also my current GA club that I started playing for in London took issue with the former star.
But you did play with Portlaoise growing up, yeah?
Yeah. That was like kind of epicentre of the community, or at least kind of our community, and how we saw the whole town. It was how you knew everyone in the town, or everyone's parents, or just random people, was through the club, kind of. So that was something I was trying to kind of reconnect with a little bit, I think.
Can you tell us a little bit about the ideas behind the new albums? Because these experiences growing up playing football, it seems to be like not just an accidental thing, a major theme in the songs on the album.
Yeah, I think I was trying to create a bit of a character as well, that was a kind of mix of kind of like a Western style hero and small town loser kind of thing. And even the idea, you know, in Ireland of a county star, it's not to be dismissive of it, but it's like it's quite low stakes. It's like I want to be just beyond parochial. I want to be like, I want to represent like the county and kind of low stakes herodom or whatever. And so it was just a really helpful way for me to, because a lot of the songs were a little nostalgic, I guess, or like looking backwards at like growing up and even just maybe the last 10 years of my own kind of life. And yeah, it was helpful for me because I could be honest or dishonest, and you'll never know.
Yes, there was a one step away, the remove.
So yeah, it was just a helpful framework for me to help, you know, write the songs and write the album, I think.
We interviewed Lenny Abramson years ago on this show about, among other things, trying to capture Gaelic football in normal people.
Yeah.
He was trying to figure out how to do that in a way that felt sort of true to life. I've seen you reference that before, that was something of an inspiration for you as well, because it's so beautifully shot and actually does capture the game.
Yeah, well, that's referring back to our paper of record. That was the headline they used in the recent interview they did. So I nearly burst into tears when I seen Paul Mescal put the ball in the goal or something like that, which was hilarious. But I genuinely said that because I genuinely meant it. Like, it was... That scene was so, so beautiful, and I had just never seen the sport shown like that.
Kind of given its due in a weird way. 100%.
And I'm sure you were as well, but I was really, really moved by that. And I was just like, damn, it's crazy that I've never seen that light, you know, put on something that is very, very special and unique to us. So in my own small way, I was trying to attempt something similar to that. But yeah, get to a gig if you can, because I feel like that's the best representation of the songs.
Yep, get to a gig. Have a listen to the album. It's called The County Star. It's out now. Listen, Keane, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Have a great new year. It's really, really brilliant to have you in.
Thanks, lads.
Keane, I think this man's about to start his outro. So
You know me. You can read me like a book, Murphy.
He is. He's looking at this clock here. So can you like just... A company owns outro. Yeah. Just some sort of like twinkly guitar music.
Some gentle strumming people.
He's going to be thanking Jandy Lanigan from RTE any second now. So let's just roll this.
Jan does a lot of great work and deserves a bit of music played.
Yeah, this is perfect.
At this point. Oh, I like that. Yeah, it just works. That's it from us for 2025.
This is my best ever production idea.
We'll see you again soon on RTÉ Radio 1. In the meantime, check out our regular podcasts and our award-winning investigative series on secondcaptains.com. Don't stop, Keane. Killian Down produced the show. Oh, that's nice. Mark Horgan is series producer for Second Captains. Big thanks to Keane Kavanagh, to Shane Daniel Byrne, and to our Christmas champion, Justine Stafford. Thank you to Jannie Lanigan in RTÉ. Thank you, Murph.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy what's left of 2025. And have a happy new year, everybody.